Well, well, well. Look who is in my house.
I'm sorry. It took me a while to get in. Yeah, that window, you hadn't been locking it. So,
it took.
But
you,
hey, what's up?
It took you a month to get over here.
I know. Well, you know, 30 pounds of COVID weight and had to walk. So.
This is Edward Barlow. This is the For Those Who Inquired podcast. No, it did not die. And yes, thank you for checking in. If you've seen the calendar, Neil and I last spoke right before, I believe, Neil, you were headed for the Memphis trip.
Okay.
And a lot's happened since then.
Yes.
Memphis happened. Women's basketball did well. Murray State football had early signing day. Ja returned from his injury. Campaign's been playing well. Quincy Williams been playing well. We can go on and on and on. High school basketball has gotten off to a great start in Western Kentucky. All of these things have happened. But in the middle of all that, we have had Christmas holiday. We've had an unfortunate situation with weather and tornadoes.
Yeah.
You retired?
I did.
Somebody told me, did they really name the studio at WNBS after you?
Yeah, they did. It's got a plaque in there and everything. Neil Bradley Studio.
Why aren't we recording there? Don't you have like a key to the city? Like a lifetime key to that?
No. No, I think they changed the key, locks on the key. Not like the next day. It was like 20 minutes after.
That Monday? Yeah. Or that Monday?
Yeah, as soon as I got out the door, right to Walmart, new keys.
I do want to say, first of all, congratulations on retirement. But it seems you've already broken out of retirement. Weren't you at a girls' basketball game in Allen County, Scottsville earlier this week?
I did two earlier games. Today? Well, let's technically tell you like it is. I did retire, but I'm technically employed through the end of the year.
Mm.
I'm on 2 weeks vacation. But we were in a spot where Austin Nance, who handles the girls' games for us, he wasn't able to do them because of work, because of the travel, and he played in the daytime.
Right.
So he couldn't really get away. The other station that covers Callaway County, Randy McCallum, they were doing all the boys' games in Ashland. Murray High's games were covered on the other station. So we felt bad that if we didn't go cover them with somebody, it'd be the Callaway County girls getting zero coverage. So
zero,
I just couldn't stand that.
Yeah.
So couldn't do all the games, but did two of the three games. Not going to be able to do the Thursday contest, but we wanted their fans to be able to enjoy Maddie Waldrop's Callaway County girls. They lost the first game, they were able to win the second one, but it was fine. I got to go over into enemy territory, Bowling Green, and stayed there. That's where my wife graduated, so she knows the city real well. And so it was fun. Anytime before she goes there, that means she goes to Target and I don't.
Right.
And that's fine with me.
You're missing out on that.
But it was really a fun trip and something different to get to see a couple of high school games. So that's the reason that I went. So at the end of the year, the 31st at midnight, I will be technically retired. But not to say you'll never hear my voice there. I left on great terms. It's just a simple, I've worked there 35 years and it's time to retire. And from a monetary standpoint, I'm actually better off retired than working. It's just one of those quirky things.
Yeah.
In terms of that. Hey, there's a cat.
Yeah.
And
it's a house cat. Common gray house cat. His name is Ozzy, actually named for Ozzy Smith. I'll get to that in a little bit. May hear a meow or two. For those who inquired, Neil Bradley no longer has a beautiful studio. And unfortunately, despite the millions of dollars the two of us combined together to make, we don't have a studio built. So until then, until further notice, until I can manufacture something in my backyard or something of that nature, my kitchen table and a simple modulator will have to work for now. But
yeah,
I digress nonetheless. You've retired.
Yes. And this has, by the way, I guess when someone tweeted it out or had a picture of it, there was confusion. They thought I was retiring from doing Murray State games. This has no impact on that at all.
Right.
I'm an independent contractor for that. And at least for the foreseeable future, unless
35 more years of
that's not going to happen. But for the foreseeable future, I don't see any issue with that. As long as they want me, and as long as I can perform at a level, as I told Eric Krigler, he was the one that came up at the Hall of Fame banquet or something, and said, what is this about you retiring? He said, it's like, well, said I'm not from, he said, oh, you can. I said, well, I'm going to continue to do games as long as I can remember at least 50% of the players' names correctly on my own team.
50%.
And he said, oh, that, and he says, well, for football, most of them are linemen. Nobody cares about them anyway. That's so half you, the team to, right you don't have to worry about those at all. So
there's 30 guys on the roster.
And that's from an offensive lineman who told me that.
Who was drafted in the NFL by the Cincinnati Bengals. Right.
Usually, when you're an offensive lineman, you do not want your name called.
Right.
Because when it's called, it's usually like, look what this guy did.
Yeah, he made a mistake.
Yeah. But if they don't, if we're not talking about you, they're talking about, look at the running back. He had 200 yards. Look at the quarterback. He never got sacked. It's amazing. Ah, didn't it's, happen accidentally.
That's because your meat and potatoes did its job.
There you go.
I Al Willman always used to say, former co-worker of the Paducah Sun, he always used to say he hated calling that the meat and the potatoes are winning the battle in the trenches.
Yeah.
I don't know how to better – I don't know how to – the trench warfare, I get it. Those euphemisms for what happens on the line of scrimmage can get old and redundant. I don't know a better way to describe it,
but though. But there's been offensive linemen do color for ball games. They haven't come up with a better way either.
No, they haven't.
And a lot of them are really smart guys.
Yeah.
They just come up with no other way.
Battle in the trenches.
That's it.
Is really the way to put it. Speaking of battle of the trenches, Neil, there's so many different things that we could start off with. We could break down what's happened just in the last month. I'd rather take a bigger, maybe more global approach as to what's happening with multiple things. I haven't even mentioned the fact that there was an MVC discussion in which Murray State made this presentation on December the 19th. Just to go ahead and tell some people, not a lot's coming out of that right now as far as noise is concerned. That is extremely quiet. I don't know if that means it's work or fizzled. I have no idea. We'll learn more as we move forward. Neil, you and I will address that later. Very, very briefly want to talk about a singular game because both Murray State men's and women's basketball have been playing really well in the last month.
Yeah.
But the one game that I think has gotten a lot of people jazzed, and I know Auburn was certainly a big game and the Racers just did not particularly shoot well if they weren't named Tevin Brown, but the Murray State Memphis game, let's maybe focus on that just for a brief moment. You're down big at the half. You and Kenny, what are you seeing in the FedEx Forum as that continues to unfurl?
Well, essentially, the Racers, I thought, played very well. They were right with Memphis, and then Juice Hill picked up his second foul.
Right.
And then here come problems getting the ball up the floor without turning it over. I think the team's pressed a little bit, trying to make shots they probably shouldn't try to make. He had turnovers. The Racers didn't get stops they needed to get, and then suddenly down 14. And let's be honest, when you're on the road to a Power 5 team and you're down 14,
with that much talent,
yeah, it's not like they're bottom of the barrel kind of team. They're certainly not. They're very talented, so you figure it's going to be very difficult. But you try to hopefully come out and begin to chip away at it. Mm-hmm. That was something the Racers would do. Now, did I think the Racers would win at halftime? I didn't think they would win, I'll be honest, down 14. But I thought they could win. But they had to make shots, get stops, and they had to keep Juice Hill out of foul trouble. He was handling the press real well. But come on, I don't think anybody expected double-digit three-pointers made in the second half. Mm-hmm. Juice Hill to go off. Carter Collins, who has a great track record of success, hadn't really had that success in a Murray State uniform. And then he goes off and has a really good night. And the Racers were able to get that additional score. They rebounded well. They forced turnovers in the second half. They turned it over a lot in the first half. They remedied that, and they were able to hold on and get the win. So it was extremely impressive. A volatile environment in terms of Memphis. Their fans were into it big time. But the Racers taking advantage of, I think, some of the inexperience as far as Memphis goes at a couple of the positions. Made a mistake or two here or there, like fouling Juice Hill on a three-pointer that looked like had no chance of going in.
That was a huge foul.
Makes all three free throws, and the Racers made the big plays when they needed to, and it was a major confidence boost for this team, but also showed how good they could be.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Fast forward just a little bit, and again, I know that this is all in the past. A couple games in between, you play Auburn, and it just felt like the ball would not fall in the bucket, particularly for guys like Trey Hannibal. Some of the bench play that we have seen throughout most of the non-conference slate just did not happen against Auburn. A lot of that was size, and I believe they got Kessler'd, I think, is probably.
Yeah.
Man, he's really good.
Yeah, he blocked a load of shots. I think they had 11 total. He had seven?
He had seven.
He had seven and altered several others. And KJ Williams couldn't get on track. He couldn't make him from the outside. And Auburn noticed that. I think they pretty much said, let him make a couple, and then we'll go get him. And until he does, we're not going to worry too much about him. We'll try to take care of him inside.
Absolutely.
And the Racers needed that second score for sure to have a chance, probably to win the game. They needed three guys that could get 15 or more. They just didn't have. Didn't shoot it well. I thought they defended well. They didn't turn it over too much. But they lost the battle in the paint, something they rarely do, and then were kind of dominated on the glass. Didn't do well as far as offensive rebounding goes, and that's an issue that I don't believe you're going to see them have the rest of the season. Memphis is good. I think they're potentially a top 10 team when they have Flanagan and everybody healthy. They're really good. They're deep. They're tall. Shoot it pretty well. Defend well. That's going to, I think, going to turn out to help the Racers. Of course, winning it would have been better, but that's beneficial. I mean, you're not going to go undefeated, and a loss to Auburn on your resume at the end of the season is not going to be a black mark against
you. Yeah, and I don't think it's going to be a black mark to have the loss against East Tennessee State either, because I mean, and you said Memphis is good, Auburn is good. The thing that you're running into right now with Murray State's two losses, you're seeing a lot of bracketology, and I know it's super early, and you've got all this discussion coming along with where the conference is headed. The wild thing is bracketology out right now has Belmont as a 10 seed play-in and Murray State as the OVC champion as a 10 seed.
Okay.
Right now. That's from Fox. That's a couple of drawings that I've seen just in the last 24 hours. Bracketology does not matter.
Right.
The tournament is not here. The conference play has not happened, so on and so forth. But if you look at the net and where the Racers stand right now, and where Belmont stands, net kind of does a pretty good job when you're in the upper 40s, lower 50s, and if you hover there the entire season and maybe don't win your, if you've got enough quad one wins, quad two wins, we've had this discussion many times before, Neil, there seems to be a matrix theory that brings those teams to the table. With as much upheaval that's happened in the Ohio Valley Conference, despite the addition of University of Arkansas Little Rock and potentially others, it's amazing to see that discussion's happening, not just at the major, like, you know, network level, but even you have some mid-major, like, thirsters, people that are, like, super hungry for mid-major basketball, talking about the possibility that mid-major teams could seep into this tournament because all of the big, you know, the big blood, the blue bloods, are beating up on each other.
Yeah.
And so, if you have some teams, let's say the Racers theoretically play 32 games. Let's say they theoretically go 27-5. And let's say Belmont goes 27-5 or 26-6 or whatever. However that all fits out. You have this situation all of a sudden where do you take a 26-win team that maybe didn't win their conference but had such a great non-conference and great conference regular season? It's just the debate is raging. Best thing you can do is just go play some basketball.
Yeah.
And conference basketball starts all across the country. We've got OVC played some tonight. This is Wednesday
Right?
One game tonight. And Eastern Illinois fell at Morehead State. We'll get into some conference looks, you know, in just a moment. I wanted to look very quickly at some men's numbers and then shift to the women. You've got, and thankfully I have my laptop here, just rocking and rolling. You've got, this is the one tab that I didn't have up. Guys, if you could just see, I have like 35 tabs up on my laptop, and this is the one that I didn't have up.
Need more screens.
Yeah, need more screens. Need four screens. I can go ahead and say this. You've got 3.5 to 4 double-digit scorers for Murray State men's basketball. As a matter of fact, if you take a look at the top 25 scoring, Neil, from what the Racers have, you've got Tevin leading the league right now, going into league play at 19.2 points. You've got KJ Williams, fifth, 16.3 points. You've got Justice Hill is 17th right now with 11.8 points. And then you have Trey Hannibal, who had a tough game against Auburn, still averaging 10 points per game in 12 games at 26. That's four double-digit scorers. And then you've always got maybe a lingering guy that's kind of in that 5 to 8 range. A couple times it's been somebody like Jordan Skipper Brown. It's been Jackson Civils. It's been
Carter Collins.
It's been Nick McMullen.
Yep.
Let me ask you this question going into conference play, Neil. What do you make of McMahon's rotation from a depth perspective? We're seeing 9 guys.
right now.
I actually think it'll stay there. That's probably one more than you usually see with Matt. Matt's usually will strongly play 7.
He's a 7-8 guy.
Get 8. But I think right now he'll use 9 because 9's producing for him. He's getting something out of all 9 of those guys. Having to use Daquan Smith somewhat is a backup guard, and he's not giving the team bad minutes. He defends well, starting to make a few shots.
He looks healthy.
He does. So he's at least someone that Matt can depend on for a few minutes a game, and the way he gets more minutes is to give him 6 good minutes. That's how you get 8 minutes the next time.
That's right.
So, but I like at least what I've seen out of him, at least in small doses.
And I think Skipper Brown, too. I mean, I know Skipper's not averaging the 10 and 5 he did at EIU, but his role's different. And, something else that I think has been addressed with me, and I'll take it for what it is, Carter Collins, I think, has played really well. He played well against Auburn, just didn't take a ton of shots.
Right.
So people expecting him to average 15 points per game, and you and I talked a lot about that prior to the season starting. The reason I'm hesitating here, I don't know if Carter Collins, one, is not hunting his shot. That's number one.
He should still be a 10-point-a-game guy.
He's not shooting 45% from the field.
Yeah, yeah. And I think he will be. I think in OVC play, he'll average about 10 points a game. So he'll take the – it's not a big step. It's only making a couple more shots a game.
Yeah.
Make a 3 and another 2 or hit a couple of free throws. He's a 10 a game.
Yeah, a couple layups.
Yeah, so we're not asking a lot out of him. I think he'll do it because his track record says he's going to do it.
The one thing that I will say too, though, and I'm not trying to speak ill will at all, I think Carter Collins has afforded Tevin Brown to really shine. And I, to say these things, Tevin Brown has shined his entire career. I don't mean that at all. I'm saying that we're seeing a lot more freedom out of Tevin. Mm-hmm. I mean, look how free he's getting offensively. Look how calm he looks on defense. His Memphis game is a pro tape, quite frankly, on both sides of the ball, on how well he played different guys. His Auburn tape, he was legitimately the only reason the Racers were in that game in the first half.
And they were trying to stop him. It's not like they forgot about him.
Yeah.
They were trying to stop him, and they couldn't.
And they could not stop him. He played phenomenal basketball. And we're talking about an Auburn team that has Wendell Green and Jabari Smith and, like, just an Alan Flanagan, and the list goes on and on. Smith is probably a top 3 pick this year in the NBA draft if he declares. He is a specimen. And so Kessler is terrific. So we just get into the situation of Tevin has been rising to the occasion. He has been defending top players, but there's a lot less pressure for him to go out and get every rebound, get every assist, get every steal. There's just more offensive flow, I feel like, than maybe the last 18 months. You know, last year, I understand comparisons to the Thief of Joy. Thank you, Matt McMahon. But if you take a look at junior year Tevin 12, 16 months ago, you know, he was an all OVC type player, but he was the 10th guy. He almost did not make the team.
Right.
And he just never really could find a rhythm offensively.
Last year, I think that COVID year is just one of those years you can just kind of put a pencil through it for everybody. It really, I think it caused a lot of issues. And I realize some players shined in some leagues and some teams and some didn't. But I think you can see Tevin's back to being the Tevin of old right now. He's as good as he's ever looked to me.
And he's leading the league in virtually 4 or 5 statistics.
Right.
He's well on pace to be becoming the OVC's greatest 3-point shooter. And again, we've always talked about he's so much more than that.
Yeah, barring injury, he'll get that done.
Yeah. So one of the things, again, there's a lot of things you and I can talk about, a couple things I want to address. I know this is a big week. Murray State opens conference play on Thursday, doubleheader against, I believe, Southeast Missouri State.
Right.
And then on Saturday, that's now unfortunately just a women's game, and that'll be a great women's game. It's Tennessee Tech, Murray State women. Going to be a lot of fun, but the Tennessee Tech men's basketball program is dealing with COVID protocols, so that game has now been postponed to what will be a 4-game slate late in January over 7 days.
And that really puts Tech behind the eight ball because their Thursday game with the Tennessee State has been canceled as well, so they don't play either game. Mm. So those are going to stack up on
it.
Belmont's game with SIUE, it's out. They're going to play both of those games that have been canceled that we just mentioned on the 17th. Murray State game moves to the 24th. And SIUE, they had some problems with COVID last year. They're having them this year.
Yeah.
And teams are doing it different ways. Some teams, if they get a positive test, they test everybody, symptoms or not. And if you test positive, you don't play. The way that most teams are doing it, the ones that are playing, if you have symptoms, they test you. If you test positive, then you're out. They don't test you unless you have symptoms.
Right.
That's all they do.
Yeah.
And they just continue to play on. Especially with the Omicron.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, the variant.
Another problem.
There's it's created other problems, but it doesn't seem to be one where, at least in the college age athletes, most of them that have, almost all have no symptoms.
Right.
But on these football teams for the bowl games, they'll get a few. They test everybody, and there's a lot of them. They canceled several games.
Yeah.
So it's going to go different, but there's obviously a lot of teams that if someone comes down with symptoms, they're testing all their team. And
right.
If you come out with a positive test, boom, it's a 5-day window to, quarantine or whatever they call it.
And I've already been reading, you're going to see, and I know this is a dovetail a little bit, you're seeing a lot of teams – as they come back, due to CDC guidelines and requirements, suggestions, you might see some players in masks this year, because if they come back from their quarantine and they're asymptomatic, they may play with a mask for 5 days. And if it means they get to play, they're going to play.
That's their choice.
It
won't be a team mask requirement, but it'll be individually.
Right.
Hey, if you want to play, you can wear this, or you can not play.
Yeah. Speaking of playing, and that's a very important point, because people need to realize that this is still probably going to be an issue between now and April. As far as just dealing with the protocols,
right,
and what's in place for the NCAA. Conference standings for the men: Murray State at 10-2, Belmont 10-3. Moorhead has moved to 9-5. That's your top three teams right now, with Belmont and Moorhead State with the longest winning streaks. After that, it's kind of a mishmash of what's going on. SIUE at 6-7, Tennessee State at 5-7, Austin Peay at 4-6, but they've played a relatively tough schedule. A lot of these teams, of course, played tough schedules, getting some money games on the road. Southeast Missouri at 5-8. We know that they've had a couple good wins. They got really good offense. UT Martin at 4-8, Tennessee Tech at 3-10, and Eastern Illinois at 2-12 with a loss tonight.
And they led at Moorhead at halftime.
They led at Moorhead at half.
So there you go.
Any given OVC night.
That's it. And so if Moorhead came out thinking, oh, we're going to roll this team,
yeah,
they were wrong. They won, but they didn't roll them. And you got to be careful every night.
You do.
Remember, the Racers last, this past season, they go to Tennessee Tech. Tech was a 20-something loss team.
Yep.
And lost to them.
Lost. Mm-hmm.
And it,
because they slept, walked through the game, and just weren't interested.
It was just an awful performance. And as Matt says, you put those behind you and go ahead to this year. And he didn't even want to talk about Tennessee Tech this week on the coaches show. I wanted to talk about Southeast Missouri because they get to that one game at a time mentality. I think all coaches are convinced it's bad luck to talk down the road.
It is.
They just don't like to do it.
And I get it. I'm not a coach. I get it. I mean, that makes sense. It's the reason why I'm not a coach. Right. I'd be thinking about, how do we get to March? Man, how do you get to Saturday?
Yeah.
Like, how do you get to tomorrow morning? Let's actually focus in that regard.
Yeah.
Speaking of changing subjects and just going to the next thing, Murray State women's basketball, Neil Bradley. They have been quite good. Two losses. I know, certainly, expect is not the right. Rochelle, I'm sorry if you're listening. Not expected losses, but favored, certainly heavily favored SEC teams in Missouri and Florida. We've talked a lot about the Missouri game. Thought Florida shot the ball okay. Hard to simulate that athleticism. 25-plus turnovers is hard to overcome. But otherwise, played a pretty decent game. Hung with them in most statistical categories. Again, 25 turnovers. Not going to really do anybody a lot of favors. Murray State women's basketball finishes their non-conference slate with, I think, probably the one game that maybe peeved Rochelle the most will be the loss at Samford. Just because statistically, didn't hit free throws, didn't shoot the three well, didn't shoot that well from the field, and got massively out-rebounded.
I watched the game. They stunk.
Yeah.
I mean, they did.
And they'd say it.
I'll sit in the room with them, and we'll watch the game, and they'll go, yeah, we stunk.
Yeah.
But that's the only game they've stunk.
Yes, it is.
I mean, that's it. Could get no rhythm, no offensive rhythm, rebound, couldn't get stops when they needed them, giving up underneath. But I haven't seen them stink in any game.
Mm-mm.
They're a must-see ticket. And I can't wait to see them this week, especially against Tennessee Tech. Tech not quite what they thought they were going to be, but still a pretty formidable opponent.
Well, formidable, third in the league right now. They have the second longest winning streak in the conference. They are 5-5, starting to rebound. They played a tough non-conference schedule. We're going to go ahead and talk about standings right now before we get into some numbers. Murray State women's basketball leads the conference at 8-3. Austin Peay, 7-3. Both teams are undefeated at home, by the way. Then Tennessee Tech, 3-1. Eastern Illinois, Tennessee Tech's 3-1 at home. They're 5-5. Eastern Illinois 5-6. Tennessee State 5-6. Belmont 4-5. Don't sleep on that at all. They played a ridiculously difficult non-conference schedule, and they still have one of the best players in the league in Destiny Wells, and everything wrapped around that. So we can go on and on, but it's kind of a mud bath after that as far as what's going on. And you talk about from a conference perspective, Neil, who's doing well. Caitlin Young leads the conference in points and rebounds. She keeps that up. That's going to be OVC Player of the Year conversation, yeah. Not just all OVC. Like, that's Player of the Year conversation. You got Destiny Wells. Want to mention her. Just, you know, she's played 9 games. She's averaging 16.7. Caitlin Young's averaging 19.7 points per game and 8.5 rebounds per game. Guess who's second? Neil, I'm going to ask you this right now. I'm looking at it. Guess who's second in the league right now in rebounding?
Alexis Burpo.
That's correct.
How about that?
Done. 8.1 rebounds per game right now in 11 games as a guard forward hybrid.
Swiss Army knife.
Not bad for a Hickman County graduate or native, not a graduate, Murray graduate, but as a Hickman County native. And I don't mean that.
Hickman County's going, yeah, we wish.
Yeah. I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, like, that's a local grab.
Yeah.
And again, for a lot of people, just didn't think she was going to play Division I basketball.
Well, I've told Rochelle, of the three of them, I thought she might have the toughest time because of her position. Yeah. Very thin. I thought she might have
size
the most difficulty.
Yeah.
Macy pulled the ball well enough, shot it well enough. Lex, dynamite shooter from the outside. I thought she'd be okay.
And can play good defense.
I just thought, well, I don't know if Alexis is. And turns out, look what she does. I mean, she's so valuable on that team. Whatever she needs to do. We've always joked that if they needed to have her drive the bus, she'd go, yeah, just give me the keys.
And
just
do whatever. Speaking of driving the bus, Hannah McKay is fifth in the league in rebounding right now. Murray State has three of the league's top five rebounders.
What do you think Rochelle's focus has been? Because remember, like, 5 years ago, they were getting smoked on the board. Like, please, somebody, just get one rebound.
Get one.
Give me one.
Yeah. Tick that on the stat sheet.
But yeah, she went out and solved that problem. Going to be, not to look past SEMO, Rochelle would be mad, but
not at all.
You got Mackenzie Coleman, who has big size inside for Tennessee.
We've been watching
Tech
her for so long. She's so good.
So you got Coleman going up against Caitlin Young. That's going to be quite a battle.
Oh,
now,
awesome.
Tech isn't where they were going to be. Jordan Brock, super senior, tore an ACL. She's out for the year. So long distance a gunner that they're losing.
No.
That's part of the reason that they have the record they have.
I am heartbroken.
Yeah.
Jordan Brock is awesome. And salute to another Kentucky young lady who had a terrific high school career. That hurts my heart. I didn't realize that. Thank you for hurting my heart. Macy Turley, fourth in the league in scoring right now at 15.7 points per game and has been on an absolute heater from three-point range.
Is she making any free throws?
It's funny. Yeah, she's making free throws. I know she's not making them at the 96% she made them last year. But she is leading the conference in three-point shooting right now as far as makes, I believe, and percentage. She has 29 three-pointers, a couple of cold games, which naturally...
Yeah, that's part of basketball.
What goes up must come down. Three-point percentage, Macy is currently third. She is shooting 43.9% in 11 games. Casey Kidwell from Austin Peay and Yamiah Johnson from Austin Peay are both leading the conference at about 44%. Block shots, you talked about it. Mackenzie Coleman is second in the league with 12 blocks in 10 games. And then Alexis Burpo and actually Jada Black are both tied for fourth with almost one. So just a lot of different things. I haven't even mentioned the fact that from a scoring perspective, you've got Caitlin and Macy, but then Murray State also has Hannah McKay is 16th in the league at 11.1 points per game. You and I have talked a lot about her growth this year.
She's really improved.
Really, really improved. Burpo is almost at 10. She's averaging 9.8. That's good for 22nd. And then there has been this middle ground for them, too, where like Lex Mays has returned from her COVID protocol, and she's been shooting the ball relatively well. Kaysen Connor has gotten minutes and played relatively well. You've had you know, Claire McGowan play pretty well off the bench. And Rochelle, really, if you think about the depth, you know, the Hyphenator's back.
Yeah.
And she played great against Florida.
Yeah.
You know, so you have this situation now where you have I just lost the name of the Hyphenator. Woods. Bria Sanders-Woods. I always see I see Woods, but I don't see Sanders. She's just the Hyphenator now. But you have this situation, Neil, where she's starting to return back to form. The depth, you know.
Oh, it's good.
It's really good. Charlie Settle's been getting some
But it
minutes.
Makes for good practices, too.
Yeah.
You can't take a day off. Take a day off, you're going to be coming off the bench in a 40-point game.
Are you surprised, Neil, because you've seen a lot of women's basketball this year yourself, and as have I, actually. I've had a chance to see 3 or 4 games. Are you surprised that Rochelle is actually about 9 or 10 deep as far as going that far?
I think she likes doing that. It gives her a lot of options. If she needs to press, she can. It keeps her players fresher at the end of games.
Yeah.
And I don't think she hesitates to play that many. So that it really doesn't surprise me. I mean, she's had years she would have loved to have had that many to play, but, you know, you just couldn't because she wasn't that deep. She had several players on there that just, you know, honestly weren't good enough to get minutes.
And I want to take a look here really quick. Murray State women's basketball actually tweeted out some numbers, and it's somewhat self-serving, but that's right. Okay. It's where they stand right now. Let me bring those up super quick. That's, again, one of those situations, another 50,000 tabs. I have not pulled that one up. Also, at the same exact time that we are talking and doing this podcast, I'm watching the numbers tick on the Lakers-Memphis Grizzlies game. I know a lot of Murray State Racer fans are watching that. Murray State women's basketball, got it right here, going into conference play. They're second in the country in defensive rebounds per game. They're eighth in the country in free throw makes per game, which you and I have talked a lot about. This team makes their free throws, including Alexis Burpo. No disrespect, Burpo. She has struggled as a free throw shooter her entire life.
Oh, and that's not a bad. In high school, you didn't want her to go to the line.
Yeah, she's a 50% free throw shooter. It's a coin flip.
Yeah.
And she started out the season, I don't want to knock it on whatever. She started out the season about 80%. And if she even stays at 70%, you love to see it. That's where that is. Eighth in the country in fewest fouls per game, so they're defending relatively well without fouling. 10th in rebounding margin, 18th in field goal percentage as a team, 20th in rebounds per game. I mean, Neil, these are numbers that help you take the next step, and then you're 35th in the country in defensive field goal percentage. So literally everything that Rochelle loves the most, other than maybe you'd wish for the three-point percentage to be just a shade higher, outside of Macy, everything that you want to see happening to win basketball games is currently happening, and
Although
they're healthy.
The turnover issue.
Yeah.
They've got to get that solved.
Yeah.
And I realize
in close games especially.
25 against Florida, that's an outlier. But,
there've been a couple other games that kind of...
Well, against Samford, they turned it over a lot. They've had some issues. They've got to get that in the 12 range. Less is fine, but somewhere around 12, they can live with that.
I'd say
because they have too 12. Much talent.
Yeah.
To lose games by making 20 turnovers, they're just giving teams other possessions, taking possessions away from themselves. And as you said, in close games, that will get you beat. That's the only hurdle I think they need to climb. If they can solve that, this won't just be a good Murray State team. They have the potential to be great.
Well, I tell you what they're trying to do, and you can see it. And I like it from an offensive perspective. They've tried to play Macy Turley off the ball more to expand that offense to the next level. It's given Caitlin Young another outlet to pass to if she's doubled and tripled, which is happening quite a bit. You have this situation where Kaysen Connor or Claire McGowan or even Burpo, who played some point guard a couple years ago, they're trying to get other ball handlers involved, which is giving Macy – like I asked Rochelle the other day, what would you rather have? Would you rather have Macy Turley pull up and shoot, or would you rather have catch and shoot? Like, where do you stat that? And would you rather her take a 15-foot jumper or a 3-pointer? Because they're both almost as effective. Like, I mean, you'd love to have the extra point per se, but from a statting perspective, how do you tell her where to shoot from? Because she's automatic from pretty much any of those locations. I mean, when you're shooting 50% or north of 45, at the 15-foot jumper, the 16-foot jumper, the baseline, the three from anywhere around the rainbow,
I don't know what you, where do you, and oh, by the way, let's not have you on the ball so that way you can find some space on a screen. Where do, what do you do? Like, who do you give the ball to if Macy doesn't have it? And that's where they've got to find that solution. Although, yeah. I mean, Macy was hounded against Florida.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, I'm not, I mean, Macy's not immune to turnovers, too. She knows that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she knows she's going to be a major focus when she's got the basketball in her hands. She's got to figure all that out.
Well, I would be sure Caitlin Young touches it every time.
Every single time.
I'm not the coach, but it'd be like, if we have a possession where she doesn't touch it, that's a lap the next day.
You're all sitting.
So yeah. You want to do 30 laps, don't let her touch it 30 times. And I mean, that's, I'm going to let Rochelle coach the way she wants. But in other words, I would emphasize that she's doing that to a great extent.
Yeah.
And she was on the coach's show.
Get the usage up.
Monday night.
Yeah.
And told me. So you have Caitlin. No, you read off her numbers. She's good. What do you think? You're going to call her in the office and go, you're doing great, Caitlin. Just duplicate that in the second half. No. I want you to score more. Yeah. I want you to shoot more.
Yeah.
So she's on her to get better because she knows she can be better because she's at times, and I've watched her sometimes, one of her flaws is she's unselfish.
Mm-hmm.
She'll have a good shot or have a good position on the mid block, and instead of taking her defender to the basket, she'll dish it out.
Or pulling up.
To someone who might not be as good a shooter.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the other thing she could do is knock that down. So
she's got KJ Williams
potential. So I think she's going to be pushed to bring more offense in the second half of the season.
Here. The 27-footer for her is not an impossible shot. And that's where KJ took that leap that sophomore and junior year as he started. And I see a lot of KJ in Caitlin just as far as shot repertoire. She's got the one hop step layup. If we see a dunk someday, that'd be incredible. Well, but like, yeah, I'm just saying, like, if she's got a 3-pointer for her size, she's got a 15-foot jumper for her size. She's got a 17-foot elbow jumper right there in the pocket outside of the lane. That's really good. And those are all consistent shots for her. It makes me wonder how often she's going to stretch out to the 3-point line in conference play.
And her footwork is something like I've really never seen for a young player. It's really phenomenal to watch.
We've talked about all these things and all these OVC notes. I want to briefly address the fact that we still have no idea as we shift toward Missouri Valley Conference talk. This is going to be a short segment, Neil, because I don't have an answer.
There's nothing. From anybody.
Anybody, anywhere. And I think that's what's worth talking about. I've not heard anything from major sources that I have in a while. And I know holidays have certainly tempered quiet. You know, now is the perfect time to have a break. We're approaching New Year's Day. We're approaching, you know, we just got out of Christmas. By the way, let's talk about Christmas later. I hope you had a good Christmas. You're here, so it must have been good enough.
Yeah.
But I digress. You have a situation where the Missouri Valley Conference conversation has become a vacuum of silence. And I don't know if that means we're working behind closed doors and there's no peep, or if there's just not going to be any conversation worth having after the new year.
Oh, there's going to be conversation worth having. Now, the question we don't know is whether it'll involve Murray State.
Right.
But they got to add somebody. They have to. So you know they're in conversations, and I know Murray State's in the conversation. Now, are they at the top of the conversation? That I don't know.
I've seen a lot of argument that Murray State needs to be at the top of the conversation, but it's whether or not league presidents believe
that. I haven't seen it from them.
Yeah.
If I see one of them come out and say it, then I'll know it. But I haven't seen it from them.
I'd love to see league presidents, Neil, come out of a meeting like that and be like, you know what, let's just go get a couple beers. Let's have a podcast.
And start tweeting.
Yeah, we'll just start tweeting about it. You know what, we really enjoy Murray State, but we just don't think they have the market. Send tweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we're not going to have league presidents do that.
No.
We really would love to see UMKC in the league, but they just need to get their facilities upgraded. Send tweet. We're not going to have that. And we haven't had any leaks at all. Like, zero. My sources are quiet as a mouse. Your sources, quiet as a mouse. Our sources' sources, quiet as a mouse. And again, some of that's going to be the holiday.
January 14th, I think we'll know something. That's my cutoff date. Boom.
Are you putting an over-under on that one?
I'm just going to say that's the day.
Okay.
That's with no inside knowledge whatsoever.
Here's I'll address this. I know why you're saying January 14th. Because you're running out of time to schedule.
Yes.
And we already know Murray State football, which continues to be everybody's like hold up as far as here, trying to be like, well, what are we going to do with football? Murray State football is not a hold up. We know what their schedule is next year. We know they're playing Southland teams. We know that they've got...
They're playing one team.
Yeah. That's right. They're playing them one of the toughest ones in Southeast Louisiana. By the way, quick shout out, Blakely Miller, former McCracken County offensive lineman and all-purchase football player for the Paducah Sun, plays for the Southeastern Lions. He actually tweeted me the other day and he was like, hey man, you gonna make it for that game? It's like, I don't know if my wife wants me to go to Louisiana for an FCS football game, but maybe I'll take the train. I don't know. Get down to the bayou and see a good FCS football game. But it's one of those situations where I don't think Murray State football is the problem. I think everything wrapped around it is. Like, what does the Missouri Valley want to do about football? That question has to be answered. What does the Southland want to do about football? What does the Big South? What does the Southern? What do all these different conferences, what does the OVC want to do about football? You know, do they want to keep Murray State if Murray State suddenly gets an invitation to the Missouri Valley and just keep football here? I don't know. There are so many other dominoes in front of that domino that we can't even talk about that domino. We can't order that pizza yet. It's just not ready to be baked.
Well, let's go to the OVC side. Because as of right now, the way I look at it, Murray State, unless something changes, they got the OVC in a tough spot where they need those six teams in.
Mm-hmm.
However,
For the auto bid.
And as of right now, unless something changes, I look at it as if the Racers are going to be playing an OVC schedule next year.
Right.
Because the OVC needs them to play an OVC schedule. The thing that could change that, Little Rock's in. They had Arkansas Pine Bluff. They play football. Suddenly, they got their six teams.
They do.
And they don't need Murray State.
They don't.
And suddenly, that's an issue.
And I've heard more than one source tell me that Arkansas Pine Bluff is next in line.
Could be. But so you have that working potentially against the Racers being in the OVC next year. And I would have no issue at all. I've enjoyed being in the OVC. It's changed. I think this would be a better opportunity in the Missouri Valley. But in terms of football, I'd have no problem staying in the Ohio Valley Conference.
Right.
I like the makeup of it.
I do too.
I don't have any issue with it in any way whatsoever. If the OVC would allow it, I would like that to at least be an option, but maybe something the OVC, and I could understand them saying, absolutely not. You're either in or you're out.
Yeah,
I get both sides of it.
I do too.
But for a year, unless they come up with another solution, it looks to me as if the Racers will be in next year, unless they add Pine Bluff or somebody else.
I wish we had more conversation to have on that, but we just don't.
Just don't have anything.
I don't. In the last 2 weeks, I've tried to drum it up. I've looked for it, used the search tools on the Twitter feeds and the tweet decks and the texted a couple of people, and I don't necessarily mean it's a bad thing or a good thing. It's just a thing. It's not been addressed. They had their conferences. I haven't texted Kevin Saul, hey, Jeff won in St. Louis. Like, I just, this is a holiday season. I'll give him a couple of weeks where I'm like, hey, what happened in St. Louis? Like, it's just a dumb question to ask. It's not something they could even probably talk about.
I'm sure it's not.
Nor are they going to.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I was saying earlier, at no point are these league presidents just going to come out and be like, well, this is our billboard and this is how we're advertising. That's not how that's going to work. We know the cards that have been unfolded. We know that everybody's talking about, what market value do you bring? Can you have heads in beds? Do you have hotel space? Do you have highways? Do you have an airport? You know, what's your TV deal look like? What can you bring to our conference? And I'm sure that was the PowerPoint presentation that had to happen between UMKC, Murray State, and I believe, was it UTSA? Is that right?
Arlington.
Yeah, or Arlington, sorry. I added San Antonio instead of Arlington. Right. Yeah. Though that's and there's other teams that have been rumored to have been in that quote thought bubble.
Illinois, Chicago.
Yeah. So. Where's Chicago State headed? Who knows?
According to Matt Brown, I don't remember the conference, but they're going to be announcing it won't be in the Missouri Valley.
Yeah. So it's just one of those situations.
Summit, maybe?
Yeah. And that would be interesting. So there's just so many different conversations that still have to be had before a Missouri Valley invite even comes. So are we closer? I don't know. I really don't. I have no idea. While we're on the subject of football, Murray State football has announced their early signing period. They were able to pick up 15 recruits. I haven't been able to deep dive on that as of yet. I do know that their 15 signees are, I do believe, Neil, all high school early signees. Right. Mm-hmm. You're going to get the whole transfer portal situation. That'll all more be more developed in the, right. in the spring anyways. That's what always happens. If you get your FBS, FCS transfer, it's going to come, or JUCO coming into the area, it's going to come after Christmas. That being said, Marcus Floyd, all OVC defensive back, has announced he's transferred to West Virginia. And a fellow defender, Scotty Hoppick, has transferred to Purdue. I don't necessarily think that means anything. I'm not trying to be disrespectful or hateful. I think that means that they both have found great FBS opportunities for them to pursue.
Yeah.
And they're both good football players, and I wish them well. I mean, I think if anything, it probably says a lot about the development for Murray State football. We, Neil, you and I have seen this in the last 7-8 years. There, every once in a while, one or two a year, a couple guys go look for another opportunity elsewhere. Yeah. And, you know, does it pan out? Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't. Take a look at what, for men's basketball, Chico Carter started to get really hot for South Carolina the last couple of games. Breon Whitley's been terrific for Southern. That's great. I'm happy for them. And that you have to do what's best for yourself. So, you know, same with football. It's no different.
Right. Yeah. I think it shows the Racers are recruiting the right way. It's good to have those kind of players here.
And build those relationships.
However, now the Racers go out and try to recruit two players better than they are to take their spots. They're not going to try to recruit someone just to take their place. They're going to try to have better ones at the spot. Now, Humpick, in terms of what they missed from him last year, not much because he was injured virtually the entire season.
It was.
Floyd had a really good year. He's a good player.
He's a very good player.
They certainly used him next year.
He had a great spring and a great fall.
So no issue with Floyd. As long as Humpick's healthy, I'm sure that he'll be able to help. But the Racers, they're rolling on. That transfer stuff's part of life. You just let it go and do what you can with the players that you have. And I have the utmost confidence in Dean Hood and his staff. They're going to bring in a good crew. The high school kids I like. I like recruiting that. But yeah. You're going to get, you know, the transfer portal is, gosh, it's got so many names in it nowadays. There will be several huge names TBD for the Racer roster for this coming fall.
And speaking of that, I'm looking at right now, Murray State did sign 3 linebackers, 3 offensive linemen, 3 wide receivers, 2 defensive backs, 2 defensive linemen, a quarterback, a tight end, and a partridge and a pear tree. So there's the Christmas throw in there. Apparently, Parker Perry, 6'4", 175-pound wide receiver out of Little Rock, chose Murray State over Arkansas State, Middle Tennessee, and UT Martin, among other. That's a note, of course, from GoRacers.com.
Gotcha.
Thank you, Parker Griffith, SID, for Murray State.
I did
State
see
football.
The one note when they sent out the original release. We had a 6'11 receiver. And it turned out it was a 6'1 guy that had an extra one. But I double checked. I thought, I'm kind of excited to watch this dude play.
That'd be amazing.
He's 6'1.
Yeah, the class also has 3 3-star recruits and 2 2-star recruits for those that count stars. As we all know, stars matter.
Sometimes matter, sometimes
not. Only when they shine. So when they don't shine, no one sees them.
That's exactly right.
That's my joke for the day. There's my John Maddenism for the day. When you throw the football and score touchdowns, you win the game. Rest in peace, John Madden. Do you want to share your John Madden story?
Yeah, I only played Madden once. I know I've talked to all sorts of people who played it a zillion times, and this was a long time ago. How long has Madden been out?
Madden has been out, I believe, since 1987 or 88. Okay. I'm going to Google that while you talk.
All right. So my my oldest grandson, he was probably early teens at the time, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Maybe 13, 14. So we had all the grandkids over. His little brother, who is now 18, but at the time was just a little dude, and he wanted to bring Madden over and play me. Oh, okay, I'll play. So I still remember this vividly. We had it all hooked up to, I think we had to have it to the bedroom TV.
Sure.
So we were scattered about in there.
Channel 3 or channel 4?
Because it had the proper connections.
Right.
It was the easiest to hook up. The living room was not going to accommodate it. So anyhow, he shows me, here's the controller. So I'm holding a controller.
Okay.
And I just thought the controller would say tackle, run, pass. It didn't. It's got A, B, triangle, circle. I don't know what.
Oh,
all
you're playing on a PlayStation.
Whatever the heck it is. So anyhow, I'm down 55-0 at halftime.
Okay.
I can't figure out how to run the ball. I can't figure out how to tackle. I don't know how to throw it. And
55-0 is not good.
It isn't good, but it would have been a lot worse. However, for Tyler, my grandson, he was having issues pushing his controller through the tears of laughter because he was laughing so hard at how inept I was at Madden.
Right.
So we only played a half. I decided I didn't want to play anymore, and that's my Madden experience. That was it. Didn't go well for me. But I know a lot of people that I know have had lots of fun playing it, and I've seen the advances. I remember playing it that day and thinking, this looks like crap. And then I've seen it in the last year, so I was like, it looks like a real football game.
It does. It plays like,
I mean, honestly, if you were sitting back a couple, 15 feet away from it, and you weren't, like me in a bar, you might not know the difference.
So John Madden, the game, started in 1988. Obviously, Madden's career as a coach, and really as
a that's what I remember as a coach.
You remember him as a coach because I wasn't alive then.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, 1988 is
happy
when
11th
the Madden
birthday.
Yeah, yeah, thank you. I act like I'm 11 every day. Ask the dishwasher, who's two rooms over. But hello, dear. She's proud of me and my 11-year-old stature. The Madden that I know is really even early enough to enjoy Madden video games, but also to enjoy his commentating myself through Super Bowls.
Yeah.
And him with Summerall, man, was just, I mean, and I understand that a lot of what John Madden had to say was like just a real obvious, like a Yogi Berra type quote. Like, well, if you score more points than the other team, you're going to win the football game, 50%.
Did he really say that, or is that
Just
Caliendo saying that?
That's just Frank Caliendo.
That's what you remember.
Yeah, no. One thing he did say, didn't he say 50% of the, or 100% of the game's half mental or something like that?
Yogi Berra said that one.
That is a Yogi
Madden
Berra.
Might have said it too. But
Maddenisms. I'll look at those later. But there's just a... He was a character all on his own, and he loved the game of football. Like I said, we just briefly mentioned him. We're going to miss him, his special actually just came out. There was a documentary that was just released. I mean, Madden was watching football earlier this week, at the age of 85, passed away a little bit unexpectedly. So while we're still on the subject of football, I want to talk about Quincy Williams, Neil, and especially with us having just talked about Murray State football. Quincy Williams, Neil, is playing really good football for the New York Jets, and that may be an understatement. I know he's not been perfect. First two or three games, he was trying to get acclimated to the New York Jets system, was a waiver wire pickup from the Jacksonville Jaguars, who completely jettisoned their entire coaching staff.
Quincy and coach.
Yeah. But even prior to the season, you did the coach and then just did it again with Urban Meyer. That's how much turmoil is going on in Jacksonville. Bad situation. Quincy also, I don't think, got healthy after a pretty decent start with Jacksonville his rookie year. And then, gets picked up by the Jets on the waiver. His brother Quinnen plays, has a couple decent games, wallops my Titans just single-handedly early in the season, just had 15 tackles. Two sacks, forced fumble, Jets win in overtime. And I was just like, cool, Quincy, thanks, man. But it's one of those situations where he's built on that game. Neil, he's top 30 in solo tackles in the NFL. And again, this is a guy that I'm looking at the stats right now, had like one solo tackle in the first. Okay, so here's what he had. In week two, he had three solo tackles. Didn't even play in the first game. Week three, he had six solo tackles. Week four, he had 10 solo tackles against the Tennessee Titans, who won, 27-24. Jets did. So, yeah, he's been really good. Since this is week 11 through week 16. 11, 10 solo tackles. 12 in week 12, four solo tackles. Week 13, seven. Week 14, five. Week 15, eight. And week 16, four. And in that time, Neil, he's averaged almost 10 tackles a game total.
It's fantastic.
It's absolutely terrific. And that's the thing. He is going to finish. I mean, knock on wood, he's got two games left in this regular season. I mean, he could finish with 100-plus total tackles and maybe 80 to 90 of them be solo tackles. He's just been like this heat-seeking missile. The reason I'm bringing him up You know, there's a lot of literature out there right now. The Athletic's done a special story on him in the last couple of weeks. The Associated Press has done a couple of stories on him. He and Quinnen have started to develop this rapport, which they were brothers already.
Right,
but they clearly are bringing like this culture to the team. It's really interesting to see Quincy play this well. You know, drafted out of the third round, you thought he was going to play well for Jacksonville. You get cut, you don't know what's next. He's playing well.
And he's in New York. If you want to get written about good or bad, do it in New York.
Yeah.
And they'll find it if it's good. If it goes south on you, you're still good.
They'll find that too.
Yeah, that's right. Goat or hero, you're the guy.
Yeah. You're going to be a headline.
You're looking for clicks or selling papers, whichever they're doing.
Neil, you and I talked about this when he was drafted. He is the highest drafted ever racer. Not OVC, but racer. You mentioned a gentleman, and I don't want to get into this whole conversation of who's had the best career as a racer in the NFL, but you mentioned a gentleman that had maybe a pinnacle career for football at the NFL level.
Yeah, Gil Maines, who's a Hall of Famer for Murray State. He went on, I think he won a championship. I remember
1957, right? I think.
And I remember meeting him, and I think I told you, and this is the best analogy I can give. Those of you who've seen The Princess Bride, if you remember Andre the Giant, reaches to grab the hand of the princess, and you see this little bitty hand in this huge giant. That's what my hand looked like in his. I think he told me he had a size 23 ring. I'm a big guy.
That is
I'm an 11.
That's three times the size of my ring.
I have an 11. And I mean, my hand in his, it looked, I've never looked at my hand in anyone else's ever, but I did hear it because I went, oh my gosh, I've never seen a hand that huge. Had a big, deep voice and just as kind, gentle a giant as you could ever imagine in terms of just a really fun gentleman to talk to.
Unbelievable. There have been some Murray State football players that have had singular moments of success in the NFL. I'd say Walter Powell had a few notable moments. Austin Lane, a few notable moments. Shane Andrews, I believe, kicked in the preseason for a couple different teams. Guys have had some time in the NFL, you know. Casey Brockman took a couple snaps that, you know, it definitely was in a big part of the Seattle Seahawks, you know, preseason camp before getting cut. Other guys have been on training rosters and things like that. There has been some Murray State football success in the NFL, but Quincy Williams is putting together a fairly memorable season for a guy that was a waiver wire pickup and, you know, kind of was maybe on the outskirts of the NFL.
Right.
Once you're cut, it's so hard to really kind of get back into a practice team and a practice squad and just get back into this rhythm. And now he's a contributing player for a starting defense. Yeah. I don't know if he'll start next year. It's too soon to think about all that. There's still a summer camp and development and things like that. But, you know, Quincy is becoming a kind of a fan favorite.
Well, he'll play with somebody if it's not them.
Yeah.
He's at least done that for himself.
I mean, he's just there's this elite closing speed that he's got. A couple weeks ago, he sacked Tyrod Taylor from the blind side and against the Houston Texans and just obliterated his backside. And I like Tyrod Taylor. I hope he does well, but that was a cool play to see, you know, from Quincy Williams coming off the knife there. So it's going to be really interesting to see where his career goes from this point moving forward. But I suggest any racer fan, a lot of literature out there, and just Google it. You'll find a couple of decent stories right now talking about his career right now and what it's doing in the Big Apple. So it's really cool to see that. I did happen to snag his rookie card, a really nice version of his rookie card, for like $6 the other day. I was like, you know what? I'll snag that. Just a little, put it with the rest of the racers
you've
got. Some Cameron Paynes, some Isaiah Cannons, and of course, some John Morantz. And I've got a Jonathan Stark autograph too. So
how about that?
I was able to snag that. A few other notes here. I know we've gone into a lot of different little things right now. One thing that I definitely wanted to talk a little bit about, though, is the fact that John Morant, Cameron Payne, and now Shaq Buchanan are playing, you know, NBA basketball. And Cam, let's go look at those numbers really quick. Cam, since returning from his little injury earlier, he is now, by the way, these are career highs, mind you. He's averaging 10.4 points per game. 3.0 rebounds per game, 3.5 assists per game on 48% true shooting. Neil, I will say from a recent games perspective, he's probably wishing he's shooting the three a little bit better. Last five games, he's only shot 30% from three. On the season, he's only shooting 31% from three. That's quite a bit down from last year. He's taking the most shots he's ever taken in his career. Oh, and by the way, Phoenix Suns have the second best record in the NBA.
Yeah.
He is a critical part of one of the best second units in the league. We talked a lot about it last year, how he was a critical part. Now he's even a bigger part, and he's taking more shots. So still doing his part from a field goal percentage, still shooting about 39% from the field, still shooting 86% from the free throw line. He's defending well. You know, the plus minus is there. Just wish, I'm sure he wishes more than anybody, the three-pointer would just start falling for him at that 35 to 38% clip. Meanwhile, one Ja Morant, who's playing extremely well as we speak against the Los Angeles Lakers. Do catch that story. I do believe WPSD's Jeff Bidwell and the guys are down there as we speak, but I digress there. Ja Morant, since returning from his injury, which he had that sprain, you know, that knee sprain, I believe is what they referred to it as eventually. Yeah, Ja's playing really well. On the season now, he's averaging 23.7 points per game, 5.5 rebounds per game, 6.8 assists per game on 57% true shooting. That's pretty good.
And had the game winner the other night.
Yeah.
Must have it. Either you hit it and you win, or miss it and you lose.
Against Phoenix, yes. No less. And that's a game where Cam scored 15 points, played his ass off, played well. That was a great basketball game. It is really cool to see, and we say these things. Shaq's been called up for the Memphis Grizzlies because of COVID issues in the NBA, and he's gotten a 10-day hardship and might get a second because they've had a couple other guys test positive recently. Here's what I'm going to ask you. In a million years, would you have ever thought that a lottery pick from Murray State University from 2015 and a lottery pick from 2019 would be contributing so much in different ways for their respective NBA teams?
No. From Murray State? No.
And that's no disrespect to Murray State.
No, it isn't. But, I mean, usually, even if the players are good enough, they're not going to get picked. Because, I mean, years ago they wouldn't. But now I think with the scouting, they see, my gosh, these guys, they're good enough. They're good enough to play. We may have had some in the past that were, but they just weren't given the opportunity. There's no doubt that these guys are. And but it does shock me that they were picked as lottery picks, because I wouldn't have believed it would ever happen until it happened to Cameron Payne. Then we, you know, it's the sophomore season for Ja Morant, we keep saying he may go first round. Like, you know, he might. And there's like, he may go in the top 10. You know, I don't know if he'll go to the top 10. every week it was like, he's fifth, he's third, he's first or second. And then once we continue to see him play, it's like, I think they might be right. And, you know, all these scouts were coming to games and these basketball writers, and you'd ask them, they'd go, And so at the end, I can't remember, the guy was sitting by at one of the games. He was parked right by us. He was one of the big draft writers. And it was evident then Ja was going to go pro. And Ja shoots like maybe the only air ball he shot, and it went out of bounds of the season. And I said, he does that all the time. He's not ready. Well, within about 3 minutes, he swish, 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 steal, dunk, dunk. He goes, yeah, I think he's ready. So it was pretty obvious that he was gone. To answer your question, I never would have thought that would happen. Two lottery picks, and then you get Shaq playing in the NBA because he just worked his ass off.
Yeah.
Just a fabulous story.
I want to talk about this live. I know that when some people listen to this podcast, it'll be behind. But as we talk about this, as we speak, Neil Bradley, there's 4:27 left in the fourth quarter. Memphis Grizzlies are up 99-92. Ja Morant is 12-23 from the field and 6-6 from three.
Wow.
And he has 38 points. Against the Los Angeles Lakers.
So you kind of figured they're game planning on to stop him before the game.
Yeah.
And that's what they came up with.
Yeah.
Is right now he's knocking on 40 points.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's 8-10 from the free throw line.
Good God.
38 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, 5 turnovers. Does have 2 blocks. He's plus 5. We got 4.5 minutes to go. Memphis is on a 21-9 run to start the fourth quarter. He's on an absolute heater.
Can you find the idiot fan or two that was yelping at him when he came back that they needed to trade him or something?
Yeah,
like
that.
Who was, they couldn't have been Memphis. Maybe they had Memphis shirts on.
They were
on,
just trolling. Look, there's no question. First of all, it's amazing what Memphis did in that 12-game stretch.
They phenomenal. Did well. Yeah.
Go check some numbers. Memphis caught a couple breaks in that stretch. They had a couple teams that were like on the COVID break. You had a couple teams that have dealt with some injuries. They won by 73 points against an Oklahoma City right. team that started like five guys that cleaned the bus. Yeah. And that's no disrespect. Just young guys that are coming up from the G League trying to get some minutes.
What they had.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was not playing in that game. Lugans Dort, I think, was their top scorer, which I love Dort. Dort's an incredible NBA player.
Got Dork?
Dort.
Okay, sorry.
Lugans Dort. Fort Dort is his nickname. He's all an incredible right. defender.
Okay.
But I digress there. But so that's happening as we speak. I want to talk about it kind of in this podcast because in real time, one of the big questions coming into Morant's third year in the NBA was, where is he going to be from a three-point perspective? That has certainly improved. Now, he's obviously 6-for-6 tonight. He's not going to do that for the rest of the season.
No.
But he is shooting, Neil, on the season coming into this game. He was right around the 33-34% mark for three. And if he got that the rest of his career, making one out of three from that distance, when we know what he can do inside the paint and from 15 feet, and even from the free throw line, which he's tried to improve in as well, that's very dangerous from a defensive standpoint. Meanwhile, and I want to talk about it since we're here. Again, I know it'll be old news later, but you've got Cameron Payne doing his part. Phoenix Suns are up 60-52 against the Oklahoma City Thunder, who do happen to be a little bit healthier right now. And Cam has, in 13 minutes, 5 points, 2 assists, a steal, just 1 turnover and 1 foul, and he's plus 11, highest on the team with Devin Booker. So he's doing his part as a second unit guy alongside guys like, you know, Smith and, you know, Landry Shamet and Hutchinson, and later on that'll be JaVale McGee and others. So, you know, when DeAndre Ayton gets back. So you've got two guys, two very different roles playing their part, and now Shaq Buchanan, of course, with Memphis doing his thing. Neil, before I let you go, a couple other things, man, and I do appreciate the time as always. You said something pre-discussion of our podcast about the drive back from Memphis.
Yeah.
Just illuminate as to what that – because that's something that's been going on in Western Kentucky right now.
Sure. With, you know, we're playing basketball in Memphis. We're playing. I'm announcing the Racers are playing.
Oh, no, you were playing.
But, you know, getting a text here or there. I mean, I can't pay too much attention during doing text. I mean, I'm announcing the game. I engineer the game, play the spots during the game. So it's a busy time. But occasionally I would see one about tornadic activity in Western Kentucky. So I would glance at it, but didn't pay a ton of attention to it. We've had tornadic activity in Western Kentucky and Northwest Tennessee. And generally you're looking at an F1 or F2 that you know, might take the roof off a house, blow this down. Usually not anything that's deadly or catastrophic.
Damage, it just isn't. Damage a barn.
No. That's usually what you get. So I wasn't really that concerned about it. And then you know, one knew. We had the game. We this is right in the middle of it, and we were able to get the game on. So we're in our post-game show, and we're two segments in, and we lose our internet at the radio station. Well, essentially, at the time, I didn't know why I lost the internet. I just know it couldn't hook up. So we didn't do the rest of our post-game show. So we packed up early, and we got on the bus. And because we had several players, you know, milling about with family, and it was a little lengthier celebration than normal, I had several minutes on the bus, and I start to look at videos, and it's in the dark, so you can't really tell. And it looked like that looks like that's pretty badly damaged.
Yeah.
And it looked awful. And then just continuing to scroll through the Twitter feed that I have, you know, I've done news, weather, sports at the radio station where you read the radar, and I know what bad radar looks like. Usually if it's red or maroon, it's really bad. That's what we get around here with a bad thunderstorm.
Yeah.
This was purple everywhere, and that just simply doesn't happen. That usually means bad stuff. And then once we started seeing the gravity of it, suddenly I didn't feel too good about – it wasn't – unhappy that the Racers had won, but my mind wasn't on that at all. It spread throughout the whole bus.
Yeah.
We saw exactly what everyone was going through, and we were just, you know.
And y'all were driving back that night, or did you
Yeah, we went ahead and drove back. You know, once they took a look, there was another cell, and we were on the back side of the last cell to go through, but that cell was nothing like cause the catastrophic damage. It was your typical, what we drove back in was on the backside of a typical bad thunderstorm that's got 30, 40 mile an hour winds. Nothing tornadic about it, just some heavy rain. I don't think there was any hail. But we had to dodge a few trees across the road, you know, drive around on two different occasions. I think we rerouted. Instead of coming up 641 home, they went 79, and we went back through New Concord to come back home through Murray because of if you traveled through Paris the next day on a Saturday, you got to see all those power lines that had been, they were on the road. And some trees, but those had been moved off the road where you could travel by Saturday afternoon.
They had damage, yeah.
But it was absolutely awful, and our hearts went out to everybody. And we got and Kenny Roth, who does the games with me,
yeah,
he works at Peel in Holland. They have an office in Mayfield, and of course insure a lot of that. And Kenny immediately was on the phone with clients and people like that as a. It just went on and on. It was just absolutely, you know. It hit us, and I saw what happened to the city of Mayfield. My wife is a teacher there, and I mean, she teaches kids at a middle school, and I was just thinking, and I know it was bad enough as it was,
yeah,
but I pretty much told her, you have to be prepared. You're going to probably get some really bad news. And as it turned out, none of her students at that school, and I couldn't really believe it, were fatally injured. Now, they were a lot of them were affected, losing homes. Some of them were injured. One of the students did have a sibling that did get killed, so it was absolutely awful and tragic. But it was not as bad in terms of the loss of life that I really feared once I saw all those photos,
yeah,
as I thought it could have been. I mean, I was just kind of shaking a little bit there when I saw that.
Well, it's
and it was awful.
We don't see it.
Yeah, but we don't see anything like that.
And then ever.
The next day when you got the drone footage and all that. But it's the thing that it also did, and this was bad, but in a week or two, I think it brought out so much of the good in this area, in terms of people stepping up to help. And then even across the country, help from all over the place came in. You know, knucklehead here or there, but 99% of the people here to help, to do really good things. That's what impressed me. And your buddy, Ryan Hermans, is that his name?
Yeah, that's him.
The photo he had in the New York Times, unbelievable. One of the best, maybe one of the best five photos I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
66 years. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I'm only accidentally even part of that. I spent some time in Mayfield. He called me right before he was going over. And this is just me saying, oh, yeah, I know a rock star. He called me and he's like, hey, I got this thing in Mayfield. He was in town like four different times.
Sure,
you know,
yeah,
he was here when it first happened. He was here like 3 days later. He was here again. And then like finally just left, I think, a little bit earlier last week and came down again as, you know, the Bashir toy drive, you know, they came down for that.
Sure, yeah.
So on and so forth. This continues to evolve into a big time national story, really globally. I had a chance to actually talk to BBC twice because I had stepped foot in Mayfield. So they wanted someone who had seen it. And
sure.
So through radio, they were like, oh, you've seen it. Please tell us what's happening while we're in London.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really hard, actually. The from an emotional standpoint, Ryan's photo is actually an accident.
You're
in an
kidding.
Amazing way. No, not from a photography standpoint.
Oh, okay.
He legitimately was going to Mayfield because he knew that there was going to be like a church service, and he was like, he had been told there was going to be a tent.
Okay.
He had been, and which would have been cool if there were people spilling out.
Yeah, yeah.
But they like, we're going to have a tent. So like from an aerial standpoint, that's maybe not as impactful unless there's just 100 people wrapped around the tent and maybe a light or two. The fact that they had an open service, which they were going to anyways, and the fact that they had like an open service with all of that light right at dusk, everything, I don't mean this to be disrespectful, but sometimes right place, right time matters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
He knew the right place. He knew the right time, but he thought he was going to be getting a very different photo. He legitimately thought he was going to be getting like a small tent revival. Like, hey, let's come together for Christmas and leading into that. So the fact that they were not covered and were together made that photo even more impactful. So as much credit goes to Ryan, also goes to those two church congregations. They'll have a photo that they'll never forget. So I told him when he took the photo and he texted it to me, I said, that's going to change lives. that will literally impact someone forever. I said, you have to share this as soon as possible. He put it up on social media, never thought another thing of it. And by the next day, the New York Times had contacted him and said, we want to use this in all of our editions for that Sunday.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go ahead and just say this. He's not going to listen, but I'm going to say it anyways. It is legitimately like the third or fourth time he's been in the New York Times. This is something that's happened to him before. But I don't know if he's ever had a more impactful photo.
Oh, yeah.
I know he'll get another one. I know he will. He's that good of a photographer. This is not like his last moment.
Yeah.
But he absolutely captured a space and time that will never be forgotten. You know, because that rubble of those two churches and the two churches coming together really is supposed to symbolize kind of how we're supposed to be as people. Go ahead.
And I was going to say, I see that, and I take photos with my iPhone all the time and go, isn't that good? It's like, yeah, you know, but if you would get their whole head in the picture, that would be good. And maybe try focusing it the next time.
Yeah.
And then, so I think they're pretty good. And then I see someone else's and like, oh my gosh, I am so horrible. And, but it's amazing. When you talk about it being art, it is.
It's art. Because
that's art. That you don't accidentally get that photo.
No.
You have to have a massive skill set, and that was the best photos I've ever seen.
The rest of the skill was there. Yeah. It's just he thought he was going to like be in a situation where he was just looking at like a group of people all huddled together in a mass, which would have been as impactful.
Oh, it would have been,
But he was there, and it was unbelievable what he was able to get.
And the fact that everyone reacted to it, it wasn't like, well, a couple of people, oh, yeah, okay, you say it's good. But the New York Times, they do sell a few newspapers and have some digital hits, I think, worldwide impact. So the fact that they recognized it quickly, I think, shows you. And that was it was nice. Like I said, I don't really know him. I've met him, I think, through you somewhere. Yeah. I don't remember where at some point.
Oh, yeah. He covered a lot of racer games. Yeah,
so I've met him. But to say I'm friends with him or anything like that, no. But it's cool to see that. I was really happy for him.
I want to totally sidetrack. I would be remiss if I did not mention this, as my cat skitters right across the kitchen floor. He's just mad that we're still talking. Last couple things I want to mention before we get out of here, Neil. I know that. And again, I know it's kind of pulling away from what we've been talking about, but it is basketball related, and we are in basketball season. I want to give a quick shout out to First Region Basketball, playing some really good basketball. I'm not going to get into all the guys and gals that are playing really well statistically, but we're shaping up for what should be a special First Region tournament. We're about to get into district play. As a matter of fact, you've already had a little bit of district action, not a ton, but you're going to get into the heart of district play soon. Murray's boys did just recently suffer their first loss, but they're 10-1. McCracken 6-1. Carlisle County's boys are 7-1. Tillman 6-1. They lost their first game of the season because Garrett Hayden decided to go off for 70 plus points in a high school basketball game, which is unbelievable. But Tillman's won six straight since. Of course, Marshall's boys have been playing pretty well, and Graves' boys will certainly be in that conversation as well. Callaway, 500 and a little bit better. They're young and they're going to get better. So I'm just expecting a really strong First Region boys basketball tournament. And the same with the girls. McCracken County's girls are 12-1. I think they're legitimate. Marshall County, I believe, moved to 7-0 or 8-0 today.
They had 15 in game one of that tournament from Skylar Waller.
Skylar's back.
Six yesterday. I don't know what she scored today.
Yeah, and then you've got underneath that, Graves girls are going to be really good. Carlisle's girls are pretty good. Christian Fellowship's girls are pretty good. And then you've got Tillman at 8-4. And then Callaway under Maddie Waldrop, 3-5. And that, of course, continuing to improve as well. So I know that's a really just a quick mention. I'll dive into some more high school basketball as we get into January and early February. But it's going to be really fun first region tournaments at the CFSB Center.
I think it'll be fun. I like it. Multiple contenders this time on each side.
I'd say so. Yeah. I think that's fair. I mean,
there are front runners, I think, clearly, but there's a couple of teams that could make an impact.
Marshall County's girls last year were the overwhelming favorite, and that's no disrespect to anybody. Congratulations to McCracken for making the regional championship for the first time. You know, got a key piece back and everyone else with Destiny Thomas this year. So, I mean, that's why they've been as good as they have been this year and are only, I think, going to get better. But, man, Marshall is really good.
Yeah.
And Skylar Waller is now healthy. And, you know, so it's just, it's going to be really interesting to see where that shakes out. And again, I'm not trying to discredit Graves. They're going to be really good too. I mean, there's a lot of balance there, and Lyndon Dunning's got some special gals behind him. So, and I say all these things, and boys, I mean, Murray, McCracken, you know, Marshall started the season out pretty well. Graves has got two seniors in their backcourt and, you know, a couple of really good juniors in the wings. It's going to be a really, really interesting dogfight when we get to that time. So as we get closer, we'll talk a little bit more about it. I just wanted to mention it because I know you're seeing a little bit of high school basketball yourself this year.
I did a couple of games this week for Callaway County. And, you know, they're a young team, the Callaway County girls. Maddie will do a good job with them. It's just going to take time to kind of mold them into the team she wants them to be. But the thing I was impressed with them is that they're really good defensively right now. They press pretty much the whole game. But they need to make shots and cut back on turnovers. Those are typically issues you have with young teams, and, you know, that part's going to get better. The fact that she has them playing as well as she has them playing defensively, I think is very encouraging if you're a Callaway County fan.
Going to close the podcast with this, Neil, as we have made that full transition. Memphis wins 104-99. Desmond Bain with two free throws to seal it. Tyus Jones made the steal on a LeBron James pass that would have been a possible game-tying three-pointer.
Oh, sorry, Bron.
Yeah, at the 23-second mark, 23 seconds, Jaren Jackson Jr. blocked Avery Bradley's 22-foot three-pointer to also try and tie the game. So,
where are you getting that? No descriptions and accounts of this game without express written permission from the Memphis Grizzlies or the NBA is expressly prohibited.
Luckily, I'm looking at the ESPN play-by-play. Oh, okay. Well played, though, the ESPN. So,
you can tell I've watched enough of that crap.
Man, Ja Morant finished with 41 points on 13 for 27 shooting.
Not bad.
It's not bad. Not bad. Not too shabby.
But he was he a 4 or 5 star? I forgot which.
Oh,
that's right. He was...
Zero.
So that's what that means.
We love to see it. Neil, very last question as we head out. How was your Christmas?
It was very good. I mean, as far as opening a lot of different things, you know, I got I think an Amazon card, a couple of things like that. But my wife got me a gift that I will not be able to enjoy for a while in April. I think it's in April. I'm going to see Ron White in Evansville at I don't think it's at the Ford Center, but it's at some place up there.
You're going to see Ron White?
Yeah, again, I've seen him before.
Amazing.
I've seen him before. The last time I saw him was in Nashville. I guess it was at TPAC, and I cried tears of laughter. My stomach hurt from laughing so much. It was so funny. Even the guy he had before him was hilarious. And so that's what I'm going to do, is go see that. She goes and sees really artsy stuff like... some sort of musical, and you can tell how impacted I am because
she don't care about musicals
because she just saw it and I don't even remember what it is, but I'm sure it was really good. I don't remember what it was. She just saw it last week. Oh my gosh,
Did she go see Rent?
She's seen that before. She saw that earlier.
It wasn't Les Mis.
No, it was one. It was just at Memphis.
So it wasn't Hamilton.
That was it. It was Hamilton in Memphis. Yeah, she went to see that with
My wife and I, dishwasher, want to desperately see
Hamilton. So see, that was another Christmas present I didn't. That was one of my Christmas presents to her, and one of hers to me was not going. So we both really enjoyed the evening.
You didn't want to see Hamilton?
No. To me, it's like, I hate musicals. Okay. And it's like, someone's going around, well... Is there any way we could make musicals worse? It's like, well, you could make a hip-hop musical. Like, bingo.
So they did it.
So, yeah, that did it.
Based on historical reference.
Yeah, yeah. So that's fine. And I love history. And she said, you'd love history. I said, I do love history, but I don't like musicals, and I don't like hip-hop musicals. So, no, I'm not going.
Neil, that hurts, man. All right. Well, we'll
I'm going to be taking your man card when you leave.
That's fine.
If you think that
You know what? I never had one.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
All right, Neil, it's been real. It's been fun. It's been real fun. Hey, it's not going to be a month the next time we podcast unless news happens again. Yeah. That's the crazy thing.
Well, you're just going to have to give me some notice on my schedule because I have – oh, that's right. I have a lot of time. So just let me know when you want to do it. As long as I'm not calling a racer game, I'm free.
Jesus, man. Enjoy retirement, Neil. We'll see you down the road.
All right. Thank you.
See you.